The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you? Save me from myself this morning.
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov, Eid Mubarak. It's a very, very busy time for us.
It is.
Renewals and new months, and of course a holiday week in Israel as well, with the upcoming Independence Day celebrations on Thursday. We will talk a lot more about that over the course of this week. There is certainly a lot to be said about 74 years of independence. It's really every year that goes by, it just becomes more and more astonishing how things are going here. And of course, Howard, I know you and I have spoken a little about your visit here and some of the things that you experienced, and some of it is already documented. But I know that you were, in your own words, somewhat conflicted by your visit to Israel. And I know that one of the things that bothered you was the attitude, or perhaps lack of attitude, to service in general. People really not giving much of a damn when serving you or attempting to serve you as to your well-being. And I think that was one of the messages that I picked up. Would that be a fair statement?
I think that's exactly. It's 100% a fair statement.
And I think that there's a certain context that we can perhaps put around that. It struck me on a recent visit to Italy, not so recent, but a few years ago, that when you go to a restaurant and you sit down, the person who comes to serve you is dressed in a collar and tie, and he's got one of these tablecloth looking things around, like an apron around his waist, and he has his wine opener ready ready for action. And this is a person who is a very proud waiter, who does that for a living. That is his profession. That is what he's been trained to do. That is his life. That's what he loves doing. And then you come to Israel and you sit down in a restaurant, and the people who serve you of what I would describe as gig artists. They do it as a gig.
Yes.
It's not their profession. It's not what they do for a living. It's what they do in order to get by, to help them through the current situation. And generally, they are young people. They might be teenagers, students, before the army, soon after the army, just using time and space in order to make a little bit of money in order to get through the next stage in life. Many of them are perhaps even full-time university students who are financing their own studies and therefore need to have a job. And they are far from that Italian character that I painted, who does this for a living and is immensely proud. So that is the whole gig area in Israel in terms of service is very, very common. The likelihood that you're going to come across someone in a restaurant or even at a coffee bar or wherever you happen to go to get service, the likelihood that you're going to get somebody there to serve you who is actually doing it for a living as a profession, who is proud of it, who loves the job that they do, is very, very slim indeed. Most people are just doing it because it's a part-time job in order to get them through the next stage. And so I think that we suffer as a result of that from lack of customer service, because the people who are doing this job are very transient, who are not particularly committed to it, who are doing it in order to serve a particular purpose. And, you know, I think that you felt that when you were here.
I'll tell you the other thing we felt, and a lot of people mentioned the same thing, and it does appear as though it was happening at the airports as well, is a tremendous lack of staff. That a lot of places are very understaffed. It seems to be that there's almost a very, very high employment in Israel. And I did read an article why the airports were, that it was taking people 4 hours from when they arrived at the airport to check in. And it was absolute chaos at the airport. And what they were saying was they lost a lot of people during the COVID pandemic. They'd allowed certainly their, what we would call their casual staff, to leave, and they can't get them back. And we did see that at a lot of hotels as well, that were very, very understaffed.
I absolutely agree. And it was one of the things that I wanted to talk about, is that post-pandemic, there is a significant issue of understaffing in Israel across the board. And not only were people laid off, but of course, let's not forget that people were given furlough. People were given national insurance money to stay home during the pandemic. And so particularly people who are earning kind of minimum wage or close to minimum wage, which is generally the wait staff and, you know, the hourly people who work on a part-time basis. They have now discovered that it actually is more worthwhile staying home and, of course, getting money from the government than it is worthwhile for them to go in and actually work. And that's been a real problem, because even though the furlough money has evaporated and that's no longer available, people generally haven't returned to those jobs, which is very, very concerning indeed. And in fact, a number of restaurants that I know used to open from morning until quite late at now are now closing at very, very early hours because they simply can't get people to work. They simply can't find the staff. I know you were in Ranan, and if you go along in Khuza, there are a number of restaurants that close at 4 or 5 in the afternoon. They remain open over lunchtime, and all of a sudden in the afternoon they close because they simply can't find people to work.
You know, we noticed that in Jerusalem as well, and it was quite strange. We couldn't believe, even after Pesach ended, everybody rushes, of course, to go and buy their foods and their pizzas. And I was standing on Ben Yehuda, and you would see people running past and saying, "Let's go to Apple Pizza." "Oh no, it's closed. They haven't opened." They didn't open after Pesach. It was difficult to find places that were opening at night. So in other words, after Shabbat, after a Chag, a lot of places simply didn't open. And I'd never seen that in Israel before. Now I understand why, because they simply can't get staff. But I thought of a pizza place not opening after Pesach. It just blew me away. I couldn't believe that they didn't want to cash in on that particular night.
Heinous crime, absolutely. After Pesach, that's exactly when the pizza places should be open. But another factor which is interesting, I noticed a local coffee shop at a mall in Ranana was closing earlier than usual. And I asked the owner why he was closing so early. And he did have staff in the shop. Mm. And he just said to me, "There's nobody here. There's no business. There's nobody coming." There is a certain lack of business as well coming through, even though there seem to be people around. But he said, "We've been standing around for the last half hour, 45 minutes. We haven't got business." So I told my team to close down. I can't afford to keep the team here when there just aren't the people coming through. So the pandemic has certainly left its after effect on the way in which people are doing business. People have also discovered not only working from home, as we know, but even people who run food establishments and coffee shops, they've had to be very, very smart about their opening hours and what value for money, for their money that they, and for the staff that they're able to get in. When is the best time for them to have the staff in order to be able to generate the best income? And when the days are generally quiet and the staff used to perhaps be slightly less busy, those are the hours that they actually choose to close now rather than just to stay open. And of course, it is inconvenient and it is not nice, especially after Pesach when you want to go out for a pizza. But the reality is that the pandemic has changed the economy here a lot. And even though I think it will get back to what we experienced previously, it's going to still take some time in my view.
Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting conversation. A security guard was killed in Ariel on Friday night. This is a terrible story.
This is a really, really tragic story. A story about a young man and his fiancée who he had previously studied at Ariel University, and having been then been exposed to Ariel as a place to live, he decided with his fiancée that they wanted to relocate to live in Ariel. And as part of the process of relocating to live there, they volunteered to secure the area because Ariel is located in an area which is dangerous. It has been subject to attacks previously. And so they have a permanent security guard on duty at the entrance to Ariel. And this is what Via Czeslaw Golev and his fiance Victoria were doing on Friday night. They were in the security hut and guarding Ariel when a car pulled up. Two gunmen were in the car. They fired at the security booth that the two of them were sitting in. And then the two gunmen apparently got out of the car and then fired again at the security booth. and they then escaped with their car, which was found burnt out a little later nearby. In the process, what happened in that security booth was Vyacheslav actually guarded Victoria with his own body. He actually protected her life by putting himself in front of her. He took the bullets. He was killed instantly, 23 years old. She survived uninjured and was then forced to bury him yesterday after that particular incident. In the meantime, the security forces did apprehend two people who they believe were the perpetrators of this particular terror attack. The Golev family, who were immigrants from Russia living in Beit Shemesh. Vyacheslav was one of, I think, eight siblings, and he and his family, unfortunately, his family were forced to bury him at the age of 23 years old yesterday, just a few weeks after he and Victoria had actually got engaged. And just a very, very tragic story indeed.
Absolutely terrible. Really, really just awful. The Mossad is reported to have foiled an Iranian plot to murder an Israeli embassy employee. This is fascinating.
So what's fascinating about this is not so much that the Mossad were involved in foiling this plot, but in fact that the work of the Mossad was done in Iran rather than outside of Iran. And what we understand is that a Mossad agent inside Iran somehow managed to detain and question a member of Iran's Revolutionary Guard inside Iran, and this person admitted to the fact that he had been recruited to assassinate an Israeli diplomat in Turkey. Not only that he'd been recruited to assassinate this Israeli diplomat in Turkey, but that he had also been recruited to assassinate an American general stationed in Germany, as well as a French journalist. Now, what we understand is that the work that had been going on was not limited to the Iranian National Guard within Iran, but apparently Iran has this this group, this unit that operates outside of Iran called Unit 840 of the Quds Force. And this branch has gone outside of Iran in order to try to identify targets, in order to identify places that they might be able to attack, in order to somehow carry out their terror activities outside of Iran against particular targets. And of course, part of this, I think, is revenge against what Israel has managed to achieve, and not only Israel, but of course America to some degree as well, what those countries have managed to achieve in disrupting Iran's natural flow of events, and of course targeting key people within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and within the Iranian nuclear program in particular. And so this Unit 840 operates outside of Iran, looking for places. We understand that they work together with some of the quite well-known drug cartels and well-known international criminals in order to somehow identify potential areas that they might be able to attack. I understand that they've been active in places like Colombia and other parts of the world in order to identify potential weak targets that they might be able to attack. But apparently not weak enough, because on this particular occasion, somehow the Mossad managed to intervene. They managed to get hold of this guy in Iran. They managed to interrogate him, get him to admit that he'd been involved. Apparently, they had given $150,000 to Unit 840 of the Quds Force in order to prepare for the assassinations. Excuse me. And apparently, there was another $1 million that was going to be available in order to pay out after these three targets actually had been assassinated and the attacks carried out. So a very, very extensive operation that was ongoing and was somehow foiled by the Mossad. Who knows how they did it? The Israeli authorities have actually admitted to the fact that this was all ongoing in the background.
Absolutely crazy. What a phenomenal story, really. And you can see the incredible talent and power of the Mossad. Finally,
yeah, it does show. I mean, it shows the reach of the Mossad. And, you know, that's sometimes a good word, the reach. When we see stories about, you know, foreign foreigners being afraid of what the Mossad might do or attributing some quite ridiculous acts to the Mossad, we sort of always wonder whether it might or might not be true, because, you know, the extreme seems to be possible in the case of how the Mossad likes to operate.
That is absolutely right. Finally, the Israeli judo team has won 4 medals at the European Championships in Bulgaria.
Yeah, so this is a really great success for our Israeli judo team, who were in Sofia over the weekend competing in the European Champions. Now, I mean, we know that Israeli judo in general has done very well. We've heard of the stories of Olympic medals and World Championship medals. But this is still a fantastic feat. On this occasion, the judo girls, all 4 medals coming to our girls team. In the first instance, let's talk about the gold medal, which was so fantastic, by Timna Nelson-Levy. She won gold in the 57-kilogram category at the European Championships, the first Israeli gold medal since 1993 at the European Judo Championships. And actually, on that occasion, the gold medal was won by Yael Arad. People might remember her name. In 1992, she became Israel's first ever Olympic medalist, winning the silver medal in Barcelona. A year later, in 1993, she went on to win gold at the European Judo Championship. That was Yael Arad. But on this occasion, the next gold medal that Israel has won at the European Championships comes to Timna Nelson-Levy. A really, very fantastic achievement. She's one of the more senior members of the Israeli team, already 27 years old. She's been around a few times. We've seen her compete in some of the international competitions, and she's done very well. Other members of the team who won medals was Raz Hershko. She won her first ever medal, getting silver in the over 78 kilogram weight class. And then she lost in the final to a French competitor. And then Shira Rishoni, she won a bronze medal. And also Gili Sharir won a bronze medal for Israeli judo. So again, you know, all fantastic achievements in this wonderful week that will culminate in our independence. And we're going to keep talking, Howard, not only about your experiences in Israel, but of course all the events that lead up to Yom HaTzmaut on Thursday.
Absolutely, it is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.